I don't think anybody in Chattanooga loves Moon River as much as I do. Chattanooga is experiencing a loss, a culture loss. And I think that is a fair thing to grieve. And we are sad about it as well.
Come sad with us. This is your community. Moon River fans, please, you know, come with us because it's the magic of all of us being together.
I want to just confirm, you did say there is maybe a chance it comes back to Chattanooga if we can find the right venue.
This is my only proprietary information I'm going to drop on your podcast, okay?
All right, so, here we go. Welcome back to the What Podcast. This is a show about Bonnaroo in particular, but festivals and live music in general. Today's topic is going to be festivals and live music in general. Specifically, we're going to talk about how things have changed over the years, and I can't think of two better people to discuss that with myself, Barry, and that's Russ, and that's Brian. With us are Jeff Cuellar of Six Man and Drew Holcomb of the Moon River Festival. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic.
Doing great. Yeah, doing great. Thanks for having us.
You weren't on, but earlier off air, Jeff said he's just living in paradise or another day in paradise. And I said, I can't think of anybody that that actually applies to better than you. And you said, literally goes to paradise, what, a couple times a year, several times?
Several times a year. I am very fortunate to set foot. In fact, we just did an event not long ago in Alaska, which was a different type of paradise, one that I definitely appreciate with the outdoors.
To prove my point. All right. So the reason we are together, let's talk about Moon River at Sea first. Because that's coming up in November, right? November 11th through the 15th?
Well,
2026. A year.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time.
Jeff, I've known you since probably what, 02? Some way or another?
I'd say so. I think 02 probably was the first year we did meet. Yep, that sounds
about right.
For
long-time listeners of the show, or more recent listeners of the show, Jeff had the job that Brad Parker had before Brad Parker had it, pretty much, right? You were the
script.
You used to joke with me when I would ask your title, it was, hey, do this.
That was it.
Get it done.
Pretty much. Yep.
And so you were with Bonnaroo doing that job until what, 2002?
No, it's 2002.
2022, until, I mean, excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, 2021 was my official send away. So I left in October of 2021. Yeah.
And you now, I just saw where you are now CEO of Six Man, right?
I am. I'm the current CEO for Six Man. That's great.
Congratulations. What is the job? What is it you guys do?
We produce intimate festivals at sea for the most passionate audiences. So we try to find a group or community, and music is obviously a major component of that, that are highly passionate, and then gather all of those people together and use a cruise ship as the venue. If you think about, you know, any venue out there, we've got multiple stages, places to eat, bathrooms, you name it, and it's nice and contained, and we essentially take you on vacation. So it is no different than any other venue out there. Mine just happens to float and take you to amazing destinations. But the real magic happens on the ship, where that community gets a chance to relax, be together, and have moments that you just can't have a lot of times when you have to worry about, where am I maybe going to go to dinner? Where am I going to go get a hotel room after the show? You know, various things along those lines, because you live together. And when we're looking for these communities, it is truly the most passionate. The fans that some may say, you know, they're maybe a little too obsessed at times, but are just really want to be together, because it is that moment where the artists and the fans can be together in a way that is truly remarkable, that allows for that magic to happen. It's been fun because we've expanded beyond music, which has always been kind of the bread and butter. Everyone sees the passion there, but gone into comedy, gone into more brand style stuff with Hallmark. Really, again, anywhere there's passion, I think there's an opportunity to produce an event.
Drew, I don't mean to leave you sitting there, but I got Jeff, I got you for a minute here while we're talking this cruise thing. It's kind of fascinating to me. Six Man, been around about 20 years. Is that right? Early
25 years come August 30th of next year. So we're going to celebrate our 25th anniversary.
It does feel like in the last decade and a half, it's really picked up the idea of sailing for experiences. I did notice that, and you just mentioned it, you've branched out past just music. You got to explain to me the Savannah Bananas and what you guys are doing there. And if I sound like I'm skeptical about the Savannah Bananas, I'm a big baseball guy, so I don't necessarily love the Globetrotter stuff. But anyway, tell me what that is real quick, as much time as you want to spend.
Sure. I mean, Savannah Bananas, you talk about somebody who's got probably one of the most passionate fan bases and how they've been able cultivate it with their fan first mentality. It really was kismet, you know, how we were able to kind of come together and think, how can we replicate and do something on the ship? And if you've had the pleasure of going to their games or even just watching it on YouTube, their ability to have intimate connections with the fans through the game of banana ball now, and the fun stuff they do inside of it, the rules of, I don't want to call it overtime, but extra innings, all of it together and how they dance, how they do all of that, we're able to replicate essentially a show on the ship. And all of the players that play across their various teams, from the party animals, the firefighters, they're all in attendance and they're all out and about doing things, having fun, interacting with the fans. And it truly is a space that it's a great time. I mean, I had my kids with me the first time we did an event with them was a year ago now. And then, you know, they're excited enough to come back and do it again.
Well, the power of their brand is undeniable. They're filling up football stadiums for a baseball, you know, they're playing baseball on a football. It's wild. So I just, when I saw that, I was like, wow, they can do anything right now.
So Drew, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. How you been?
I've been great. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a couple of years since we've seen you before on the show as well. You started, co-founded Moon River in, was it 18? 15.
No, it was founded in 2013 in Memphis.
Oh, even earlier.
Yeah, we did it for 3 years in Memphis. That's a bit of a thing that a lot of people don't know about. They think it started in Chattanooga, but actually was in Memphis for 3 years. I took a year off in 17. So it's 13, 14, or 14. I think 2014 was the first year. Yeah. 14, 15, 16, took a year off, moved to Chattanooga, began a partnership with what was then AC Entertainment, as you guys know. But in the meantime, I started doing Six Man cruises even before that. I think I did the Rock Boat probably 14, 15 years ago. I've done that 3 or 4 times, and they have this great one called Kayamo Songwriter, sort of songwriter-centric cruise, which we've done 4 or 5 times. And so when Jeff and I were working on Moon River, specifically that first year, it was really kind of fortuitous that there was this missing angle of the triangle that neither one of us knew we were, you know, connected to when he started working at Sixth Man. So, yeah, so we did Moon River in Chattanooga, 18, 19. It got canceled for COVID, like everything in the world, 21, 22, and 23. So really, really great run there in Chattanooga. You know, in the meantime, there were some industry changes that sort of made it challenging. We had a rain out in 22 with the Sunday, which made it financially challenging. So, we kind of had to figure out what we're going to do in the meantime. And, decided that, the way that the community is sort of honored through Six Man's work, that it was a good fit, for a while we sort of figure out the long-term strategy.
Hey, Drew, we hopefully reach a large audience outside of the city of Chattanooga, but we all live in Chattanooga.
And
we're all long time, forever residents here. And so I was on the Reddit thread yesterday, and you know how Reddit goes. And the discussion was Moon River. Can you speak to the people of Chattanooga? I mean, there was a lot of people who loved this your festival here. It was almost like the professional outfit that this city really needed. We had festivals, but they were more like carnivals. And none of us knew that Coolidge Park would work as well as it did, at least for the amount of time that you did it. Can you speak to the city of Chattanooga specifically of just of the decisions to move to in a different direction?
Sure. I don't think anybody in Chattanooga loves Moon River as much as I do. I know that it's a beloved institution there, but no one is sort of was more sad in 24 that we were not able to have it than I was. But to your, you know, sort of big picture questions, you know, there's a festival in Birmingham called Iron Hills Festival that had to cancel like 3 weeks out. And they basically said, you know, due to sort of rising costs and low demand under demand, they're having to pull the plug. Now, obviously, Moon River did not have under demand. We sold it out the last year. But the economics of putting on a festival the size that we did in the space of Coolidge Park no longer were viable for the people who are on the hook financially. I'm not on the hook financially. When we sold it in 2018, so it wasn't really my choice. While Coolidge Park was the perfect spot because of sort of the financial cost of the rain out in 22 and then 23, we had a banner year from a top line perspective, but the bottom line perspective relative to the risk of weather, et cetera, was not an acceptable spot for the people who are on the hook financially for it. So, that just sort of left us in a spot where sadly it wasn't my choice. Yeah. But it also wasn't my money.
I mean, you guys, I know Jeff especially always cringed whenever I ask for numbers and specifics. So you can both say whatever you want. But basically what I was told was 12,000 was basically the amount you could get into Coolidge. And because of the economic changes, 15,000 is what you needed. And I think you guys spent the last couple of years trying to find a place that would still be downtown and fit the vibe and the ethos and everything that could get that number, and just couldn't find it. So,
yeah, that's exactly right. And honestly, yesterday I was with some folks from Chattanooga and they were asking me questions and they said, well, the word on the street is the city messed up. And I'm like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
The city has been from day one, a fantastic partner.
Good to
know. So I would like to put that mm-hmm. rumor to bed. The city has been as helpful as is reasonably possible. Jeff can tell you that from the beginning.
Yeah, from the very beginning. Because, I mean, I was obviously part of the site selection team in terms of looking for stuff. And I've worked in a lot of different communities. And the teamwork and just, I would say, every single department in Chattanooga working together, trying to help find our original spot in Coolidge Park and walking with us and trying to see, like, we would talk about logistics and how we would, you know, tackle things. And even in going into that year one, I can't think of a community that was more embracing and more solutions oriented than Chattanooga. I mean, it was, I can't say enough positive things about my time working with there and all the time I've worked with Chattanooga, to be honest. It was always one of my favorite places to go do business.
Well, for some reason, none of us looked at Coolidge Park and thought, throw a festival in there and
put a fence around it.
Yeah, Jeff, your vision there certainly worked, because I thought, Jesus, what do they think they're doing in that little place?
Everybody,
and boy,
did.
It was a home run. I think Chattanooga embraced it so quickly because that first year was a freaking home run as a patron, as a media member, as a vendor. Like, there was just excellent work, and we hate to lose you, but I understood it, but Reddit didn't. Shocking, yeah. Right? They didn't like it. So I just wanted to go there.
Can I tell a story about
Please.
The internet and how
Please.
It does not reflect reality as it relates Please. To Moon River? So as you guys know, in 23, we had a headliner that had to back out for health reasons a
Camp.
Week before.
Camp.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Had to back out. And they didn't just back out of Moon River. They backed out of a string of you know, a whole fall run for totally legitimate reasons. So we spent 48 hours on the phone seeing about availability of all sorts of different acts. Obviously, with that much lead time, it was very difficult. Our friends, wonderful band, Need to Breathe, did us a huge favor and solid and figured out how to get there, even though they had a show in Des Moines, Iowa, the night before, which, as you know, is not close to Chattanooga.
It's not.
Yeah.
This is my only proprietary information I'm going to drop on your podcast. Okay.
All right.
So
we announced
that just like Camp had on their socials, we announced their cancellation we waited, you know, they said to wait 24 hours because we wanted to make sure we had somebody in place for it, which we did. And, according to social media and Reddit, no one was happy about this cancellation. I mean, this replacement, right? The Instagram had like, you know, 60 or 70 negative comments, very aggressive. We want our money back. We were coming to see Camp. We don't want to see this other band. Well, so we set up an option for people to go online and fill out a form and get a refund.
Oh.
If you had based it on Reddit and Instagram, you would have thought that half the people going to Moon River were going to cancel. Two facts. 9 people asked for a refund.
Nine.
Wow.
9 people asked for a refund, and Need to Breathe's Saturday headlining set, which we can track how many people are on site by the wristbands. They had the second largest Saturday attendance in the history of the festival.
Yeah, there it is.
I'll never go again, Drew.
Now that said, I think this particular change is different in that I do think that this is a pretty different change. It's the boat sort of appeals to a smaller segment of people than Chattanooga, and Chattanooga is experiencing a culture loss. And I think that is a fair thing to grieve. And we are sad about it as well. But instead of just letting it go away indefinitely until some magic space appears, which might happen, we hope it does, we're not just going to like let this beautiful thing go away.
Thank you for that story, by the way, Drew.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
I bet those 9 people have nothing to do with the cancellation. They were probably like, Here's our money.
Damn it, I spent all that money.
In fact, they'll probably need to read my cousin's wedding.
my cousin decided to get married and now I can get a refund.
They were drunk when they bought the tickets. Like, God.
Seemed like a good idea 6 months ago. Yeah. I wanted to tie this whole thing together a little bit because, like I said at the beginning, I wanted kind of the evolution of the industry. Moon River was the first time I had heard the phrase boutique festival, and I don't remember if it was you, Jeff, or you, Drew, who told me that. But it's kind of the, you know, Bonnaroo when it came online was the everything festival, 80,000 people, and it was huge, and it had all kinds of different music, and that was the thing, and it was camping was the thing, and then the boutique festival was sort of the smaller version, the 10,000, the 12,000 people. With a finer tuned, if you will, or more specific lineup, right? Kind of to that, what you said, Jeff, earlier about the boats, the passion. People are there for a specific reason. And so that's kind of what the boutique festivals became, right? They were more specific to an area and a type of music, maybe, right?
Yes. I don't want to say AC pioneered this because I don't think we did at AC at the time where we thought we were, but that was a lot of the goal. We saw a lot of opportunity with looking at some of the smaller things we could curate, be a little bit more creative within a space in a community. And I remember our initial conversations and talking with Drew and Paul and the whole team about, you know, bringing back Moon River and bringing it even to Chattanooga. And that was the thing that was made it so special. You know, I never had the opportunity to go to Overton Park and see it down there in the shell, the Lovett shell down in Memphis. But I know even having those original conversations, having lived in Memphis for 4 years, some of the challenges with that and some of the opportunity we would have to be able to do the Chattanooga and even continue my conversations coming to Six Man, it was one of the first things I thought of of what I think would be special in a place, and Drew and Ellie and the neighbors and what they have been able to kind of cultivate in that space. It's truly something special in that community side of things. And and I can say this truly, been looking at you, it inspires me on a daily basis to think about how do we, you know, it always takes more than a special sauce and takes a special person to go about it. But that truly is kind of where it gets unique. And I think there's a lot of fun. And I hear Drew in terms of the grieving process. I grieve at leaving Chattanooga. But one of the things that I kind of rest upon a little bit on our shoulders as six men is keeping that magic and keeping the fun things that we have the ability to do. And I translate some of the things like the river. Well, now we're on the ocean. Climbing wall. We've even got the climbing wall. How do we integrate Tennessee elements into it and the opportunity to do those pieces and to keep some of that the same? And that excites me because I know there's that opportunity.
I'd love to add to one of the interesting things that's cool about the boats that it's not true of a land festival. Typically for a festival, all the acts that are playing on Saturday come in Saturday, play their set, maybe hang out, see one or two sets, and then they roll on to the next venue, to the next city. And so if you're playing on Saturday, you're 5% chance you're sticking around for Sunday, and vice versa. If you're playing Sunday, you're coming early. And so while there's this community feel happening on the other side of the stage, it's not as easy to make it happen with a festival on, you know, the artist side of the stage. What's cool about these festivals is that the artists are on the boat the whole time too. And so, you know, some of my favorite memories are like, I'm down in the casino and wow, Lucinda Williams is playing slots. Hey, Lucinda, you know, and then there's all this musical interaction that happens. One of my favorites was we were on Kayamo and Jeff Tweedy and Mavis Staples were two of the headliners. And Ellie and I were in charge of a sort of Sunday gospel brunch show. And we had six or seven acts and I'm emceeing and playing in it. And I look over to the artist area on the left and I see Mavis watching the show from a chair in the artist area. Wow. And her tour manager comes up to me as I come off stage while somebody else is playing and says, hey, Mavis wants to know if she can do a song. And I'm like, yeah.
No, not today. No.
We're tight on time.
So Mavis gets up there, no guitar, no nothing, just leads a sing-along by herself. And then she stays up on stage for the finale of I Saw the Light and she and I are sharing a microphone together. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens on these boats.
I just got chills.
Wow. Every few hours. It's incredibly unique.
Drew, if you don't mind, can we go backwards? You started professionally playing 2002-3-ish, something like that.
2003, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's 2014, 2013, we'll say 12, 13, 14. What in the world makes you want to get into the festival organization business?
It was sort of twofold. I felt like my hometown, Memphis, was sort of an underserved place. And everywhere I went, people had these preconceived notions about the city. And I wanted to be a part of sort of telling that story in a better way. I also really loved festivals. And this was around the same time that there were artists, a lot of artists doing these sort of artist-centric festivals. So Mumford had just done Gentlemen of the Road in like six different cities. Lucero had this thing in Memphis called the Family Picnic every year. Grace Potter was doing Grand Point North. The Avid Brothers had an annual event in North Carolina. And so I just thought, well, why don't I do that in Memphis? And we'll just have a little bit of a family reunion of sorts. And there's this beautiful venue there called the Overton Park Shell where Elvis played his first public show. They allowed us to rent it out. The city was great there as well, helping us logistically. At the time, it was just me and Paul and Sam, my managers, who were married to each other. And I mean, it was so homegrown that 2 hours in, we realized we had run out of change for the food and beverage.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Ellie, we had to send somebody to the dog track in East, and it was a Sunday, so send somebody to the dog track over in Arkansas to get change from the casino because all the banks were closed. Yeah. So it was very homegrown.
You can hear that extended story on an earlier episode.
Oh, that's right. I did tell that.
Yeah. You told that.
It's one of my favorites.
I wasn't there.
Like
I
four cases of water or something. You're thinking it would cover the whole weekend or something. But yeah.
And then
funny.
What about the idea to move it to Chattanooga 4 years later? How did that come together?
Yeah. Well, basically in Memphis, we I my managers and I basically realized we were risking our personal homes every year of throwing this festival. Just financially, we were not in a place that we were realizing that we weren't being very wise with our, you know, with our exposure there. And in the meantime, a festival had started in Memphis that was very well backed financially, called Mempho, which is a great festival as well. We didn't really want to go toe to toe with deep pockets.
This weekend, as a matter of fact. But sorry, go ahead.
Are they? Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and we had a great relationship with AC Entertainment out of Knoxville. They'd been promoting our shows in Nashville and Atlanta and Knoxville and Chattanooga. And they said, well, would y'all be interested in talking about potentially moving it? And they felt like Chattanooga specifically had reached out and was very open to an idea. And at that point, like to the boutique question, the idea of starting a festival when you have an artist with an audience who sort of leads the charge, it automatically creates sort of credibility, you know, in the market. We already had a pretty good fan base in Chattanooga, obviously, but even Knoxville, Atlanta, mm-hmm. Birmingham, Nashville, all the sort of surrounding markets and cities. And so because we basically, you know, took on working with AC because they were willing to take the risk as long as we were willing to take the ride with them.
Yeah, plus they had a guy that would do all that worry about the money and the water.
Yeah, it's a guy named Jeff.
Some guy named Jeff. Hey, do this.
I just said we did give a fair look at, you know, even just outside of just like other places in Memphis, like where could we go that
sure.
we could accommodate to? Because it wasn't, I know when we were having those conversations, like, is there, you know, is there explaining? We were still doing, I think at that time, we were still doing Live at the Garden as well. So it definitely had some basis. But yeah, the Mempho conversation definitely came into play and just where we thought there was opportunity. And Chattanooga was it.
I wanted to add the one more element, the boutique, and you said unique. The other thing you said to me, Jeff, I know this was you, in talking about these smaller boutique festivals, that people wanted an individual or a special experience. They didn't want to just see the band. They could see the band in an arena or, you know, a different thing or a different type of festival. They wanted that by the river in downtown Chattanooga type of thing, like where they felt like they got something different.
Correct.
Right. I remember you saying that was a big part of, and I can imagine the cruises take that to the next level. Like you said, Drew, where you're sitting next to Lucinda playing slots. I mean, you don't get that everywhere.
No, you don't get to go into the buffet line and get cheese sticks at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, with some of your heroes. Like it just doesn't happen. And the, as Drew mentioned, and it does, the magic that we see is you're there. And some, you know, some artists take it as a chance and their families can be there. So they're having a little, vacation experience too, but it's like, hey, I know this is going on. I'm a fan of this. So let me go watch. Let me go jump in and participate. It's the natural. We allow for those natural opportunities to happen. And it is, you know, a lot of the stuff is not forced. It is just purely, you know, musicians and fans just coming together. It just naturally occurs.
So does it always work, Drew, as an artist? Are there those uncomfortable moments where a fan gets a little too fanny, a little too handsy, a little too close?
I mean, of course.
Yeah, I'm about to say, surely there is that.
A stand.
I think it depends. I mean, I will say that's one of the things that's so beautiful about our fans is we probably have one of the lowest percentages of that of any artist of our stature or higher. Our fans are pretty wonderful folks, but everybody has their awkward moments, you know.
All right. Brian brought it up, but go a little bit deeper, Jeff, these cruises you guys do, I mean, you've done comedy, you've done podcasts, Broadway, food, TV and film, mm-hmm. the sports, like you mentioned already with the bananas. And let's see, I wrote it down, 16 events over 74 nights. Didn't you have your best year ever last year? Did I read that right?
That is correct. Yeah, we had our best year ever last year, and this spring, the spring of, we're in 2025 right now, was our biggest spring ever in terms of overall nights, because part of our model is, I mean, essentially we're renting the ship. I mean, just think about just like we rented Coolidge Park. We're renting the ship from Norwegian, and to, you know, even though we're renting the ship, the economies and all of the, you know, the behind the scenes budget counting and sheets that we have to keep up with there. One of the efficiencies is being able to turn it. So, you know, we'll have one event happening, and as we come back into port and dock, where those fans are coming off of a ship, and we're basically putting a new event on and rebranding the entire thing. And I'm talking down to like casino fets, because the goal is to make it feel like you're walking into an environment that is dedicated and specifically just to you. So, I mean, down to the chips, to some of the, you know, we talk about items that, you know, that they're being served from food that could be inspiration from childhood, what grandma made, to everything. It really gives the opportunity for us to kind of dig in deep and get more personal, to kind of help share that part of it. And that's where the passion comes into play. So regardless of what the event may be, we can go deeper and longer. Because of the opportunity we had there. But yeah, that is, we did 74 straight nights. I think it was over a course of 119, if I'm not looking at a sheet right now, but yeah.
And who's conceiving the ideas? Do the banana folks come to you? And speaking of the banana, I can't help but keep seeing you in that banana suit at the end of Moon River, telling everybody goodbye.
I still have it, and you may see it again if you join us.
We better see it again.
Yeah. You don't want to wear that just once.
No. It was fun.
But who's, do they come to you, or you guys are coming up with the ideas?
It's a combination. I mean, I do have a business development team that we're constantly looking for things, and as you can imagine, I don't want to say it's not the easiest sell, because I mean it's a lot. We ask a lot of our partners, to help and curate and be a part of these events, and Drew's experiencing this now in terms of like all of the different questions that we have to ask, because we have these opportunities to get really deep, and it becomes a lot. So we're going out and searching, but yeah, because we now have such longevity within the business, and I think we've gotten past a little of that stigma of, I mean, I can say it. There used to be back in the day, you know, a stigma of one, just cruise ships, and then two, being a performer on cruise ships. Like, you know, that's where my career goes to die. And I think we've been able to erase that and showcase the fact that no, we'll take care of you. You're gonna have an amazing time as artist, and your fans are gonna have an amazing time. And it really takes away a lot of the challenges that once you get there, it's all taken care of. Like it's so easy as compared to another event, and it's something that kind of drew me in a little bit too. Is, you know, being responsible for events, you know, that are doing, you know, 100,000 plus people, that's a lot. And there's something in that power, and there's something joyful in that power. But getting back to 2,500 to 3,000 people in a space that you really are working with the most passionate bunch, it just does something different. It captivates you in a different way.
Well, Jeff, I'm hearing you a professional broadcaster, podcaster, video, whatever, would skip across the question that I already had a block of to ask you that you basically just answered. but I want to stick on it just for a second, because the negativity of cruises is real. Like that's on, and it might be Reddit, right? So maybe it's not as real as we think. But I'm one that's conditioned to think, a cruise? Are you kidding me? After all the things I've heard since I was in my mid-20s, and it's kind of like a baseball umpire, an official in sports. Well, something goes terrible and everybody thinks they're horrible, but usually they're pretty good, actually. What do you run into that with artists?
I go back to Drew's comment. The internet sucks. And people in Reddit know what they're talking about.
It's official.
Once you go on and actually experience it, you're like, oh my God, like, why was I not thinking about this beforehand? Why did I listen to that negativity that's being put out there? Because I mean, I you know, this is not a knock to land festivals. All of us here have used a portalette.
Yeah,
that's not a good experience.
No good.
The nicest porta light, even the crowd pleasers, are still not as nice as the fact that you can be on deck 7 and realize, you know, hey, it's that time, and I'm gonna skip back to my cabin and have, you know, my experience
very
there,
private
and
it'd experience.
be primo and better. Yeah, or that experience where maybe I've had too many adult beverages and I need to go take a nap. So I can go make, you know, and be present. You can go do that. Now, yeah, are we moving? And does that kind of come into play a little bit? But I mean, these are small cities that are floating. Yeah. So a lot of that goes away. So I too, and I can honestly say this, I was in the Coast Guard for a little bit, but then I'd been on one cruise my entire life. And I think I was like 16 years old. I don't remember it. My first real cruise as an adult was after I already took this job. I got on and I was like, I get it. I already taken the gig. So I was, hopefully that was going to feel that way. But I was like, I get it. All of that negativity, all of those preconceived notions all go away. And we do a lot of ship tours sometimes with artists to kind of show them where they're going to be staying and things like that. And it is the biggest, I mean, it's like the number one commentary. It's like, oh, I had no idea it could be like this. I had no idea this is the kind of accommodations and where I'm going to be staying. I had no idea. And so it is a lot of it's erasing it. And I would say, fortunately, with the reputation that we've had and we built over the years is, you know, we've got evangelists. Like, I mean, Drew's even saying, it's like as many times as he's been on Rockboat, Kayamo, you name it, and he's still coming back. So I guess we're doing something right and erasing some of that negativity stigma out there.
Yeah, and I'd even say, Brian, when I first did the Rockboat, I had that mentality. I was planning on, you know, going through all of life without being on a cruise ship, you know. And then I heard about these things, and some friends of mine had done them. And so we got invited, and I went. And I was like, I think I could do this every year. This is pretty fun. Now, you know, that said, what makes Six Man so special is that it's not just like a normal, it's the opposite of a normal cruise. I mean, the music is incredible. There's basically music, you know, from noon to 2 in the morning. And you get to see, yeah, I just remember I have so many moments where like sitting as an artist, just watching other shows, sitting there going, oh, there's, do I go see Dawes in the theater or, you know, John Prine on the pool deck?
Yeah.
It's like that's pretty cool problem.
Well, and just to clarify too, because of I've not never been on one, these cruises have most of the same amenities as any, well, I'll say Carnival cruise, because that's the commercial I remember my whole life. If you don't want to go see music and you just want to take a dip in the pool, right? That's still there too. Like all the things that come with a cruise are also there. Am I correct there? I guess
you've got specialty dining. You've got the spa on some of our other ships. You can, you know, ride a go-kart. So yeah, there are definite, you can do those things. I think the other part too is you're with your people. That's the other beautiful thing. It's not like you are with, you know, you may not know everybody, but everybody is there for that one common thing.
The same thing, yeah.
And right. They're there, you know, to see and experience and for the love of what this is. So regardless of your political views, your religious status, whatever it may be, everybody on that ship has this one thing in common. And that's the experience they're about to have with, you know, with the artists that are on stage and that piece of it. And that right there, you immediately have best friends. And that's what we consistently see and why I thought of Moon River when joining Six Man, because of that community. I saw it. I mean, I got to experience it firsthand. It's the thing I fell in love with. What we built was everybody that was there was so passionate about Drew on stage, about Ellie reading children's books over, over by the fountain and all of that piece, that the beer we were drinking, you know, being from Memphis, you know, Wiseacre, like all of those things made it so special and together. And I'm like, I know we can create that. I know we can capture that community because it's about these passionate people being together. And if we can just get them together, the magic's going to happen because I know, you know, the curation from the artist side and the lineup and stuff that's put together, they already have their magic as well. So let's let's keep it going.
That leads right into my question, Drew. You, I know, curated pretty much the Moon River lineups before you did this one, I assume. And was it a hard sell getting those guys to go on a cruise?
No. I mean, a lot of the folks in that we booked have done these, have done some of the other cruises. Old Crow is a six-man veteran. Johnny Swim is a six-man veteran. I believe Carney is a six-man veteran. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of acts that we wanted to have on the cruise who've never done one that couldn't quite get warm to the idea. That's okay. There were sort of acts that were in the middle of the lineup. And but no, I think that Jeff's not wrong. Six-man has completely changed the reputation of cruises within the music business. I mean, everybody who's been around for any amount of time knows about six-man, the work that they've done. I mean, they've done Train cruises, everything from John Mayer and Train to Kid Rock to wrestling to, I mean, they've definitely revolutionized the sort of respect given to this sort of idea. It's not a new idea to agents. Don't go, what's this cruise ship offer? They know about it, you know.
Some still do.
Yeah. I gotta ask, because their local Monrovia is on the lineup.
I was gonna ask the same thing, Drew. Are you familiar with this kid? I mean, he's not a kid, but I mean, are you familiar with this
kid? I saw him open for Josiah and the Bonnevilles after Josiah toured with us as an opener. And was immediately like, put a sort of pin in that. It's like, this kid is fantastic. And he's kind of on a rocket ship. So it's really fun.
A rocket ship to the moon or to the Bahamas or wherever. I mean, is wild stuff. I mean, he's not a native. That's the whole part of the story. But he's from here down the road. And we're still like, really? What's going on with this guy? I was gonna say, if you're not familiar, you should be, and you will be. And
Brian and I when both.
If anybody's on the lineup and I don't know who they are, that would probably make me somewhat of a liar or deceiver.
Well, no, I didn't mean not. No, I didn't mean you're booking.
Oh, you
blindly
mean personally?
Booking acts, but that's a huge ascend right there with Monrovia. So huge get.
Plus, the people with him, Tyler and Carl, are really. I think Brian and I are probably closer to those two than we are with him. But glad that. So I was thrilled when I saw that on the lineup. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is so much a question as just asking for comments, I guess, but what does it say maybe about the industry, if it says anything, these things? And I'm thinking about the rainouts, the things that can go wrong at a Bonnaroo or at many of the other festivals. You know, Bonnaroo, we lost.
South Star,
South
River,
Star.
We got a lot of examples now.
Moon River.
Too many,
Too many. And it can happen, and it can devastate a fan base and the artist. I mean, there's nothing good about it. Yeah. But with these things, you have a little bit more control, right?
It's a lot more control. In the history of the company, I think we've only canceled from a standpoint of weather one event, and that wasn't because of weather. It was because it was Katrina, and they sent the ship went to New Orleans to be housing. And then we were able to redo it at another point in time. But the beautiful thing about a ship is it moves. So we're able to monitor weather and be able to look at those things and make decisions on the fly for the benefit of the event and the benefit of the guests. And a lot of times why we strategically pick the Bahamas and the Caribbean down there is because you can maneuver and do different things. And there's so many ports in all different places. So there is contingency plans. There's also, I mean, as Drew's mentioned, kind of like there's the pool deck, there's the theater. I mean, we create venues out of spaces that are even non-traditional on a ship. So we do create we used to create non-traditional spaces like Coolidge Park. We're still doing non-traditional spaces just on a ship. But if there is weather, if there's some rain, great. We've got an indoor theater. We can kind of shift some things around and have the resources and the talent to be able to do some of those things. And that does help that. I look at the business, you kind of skirted around a little, Barry, but all of this stuff is I don't want to say needed, because I mean the weather stuff, I wish that upon nobody. That's it's bad. That's bad for business. But from the different sizes and where they're at, like if we don't have this full ecosystem from your smallest clubs, from your 150 person venues all the way up to your arenas and everything in between, I believe, and Drew, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too. I believe that we need all of that for artist growth, to build those fan bases so we can continue to do this. And I think one of the things that scares me a little bit is I love the artist control with the internet, but you still got to build a fan base. You still got to, I mean, I know Drew put in the work in terms of just like graduating from venue to venue to festival to doing all of those things. And in my opinion, it is so vital and important to be a part of it, because that's what we need to, in order for the health of this business. It is insanely expensive out there to do anything. And we have to, I think, come together as an industry more to help support our artists and to do more so they can have a career and be, you know, have that longevity to give them the time to build it. Because without it, I don't know where things could go.
Drew, along those lines, I haven't thought about it that way. We were kind of talking about the, you know, it's fun for the artist as well. They get to ride go-karts and do all that. But what does it mean to have this as an option? Not just because it's fun, but what does it mean to have a cruise now as another option, as a place to play?
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, done a lot of these over the years, but never done one that was sort of focused on our people. I mean, we have obviously made friends and people along the way on those different Rock Boat and Camo. The challenges that the industry is facing with outdoor events, both from a weather standpoint and from a sort of financial risk standpoint, they're real challenges, as you guys mentioned. I mean, the number of festivals that have either canceled or been really impacted by either one of those things. And then the third one is, in this era of music, the number of options are insane. We talk about something like as simple as the Sphere, right? In Vegas, it's like, well, that doesn't affect our business. Well, it does, because now somebody spends their music budget on $1,000 tickets to the Sphere, $1,000 to get two people round trip to Vegas, two nights in a hotel, and then they play blackjack too long. So all of a sudden, their entire $5,000 live music budget is gone in 2 days.
Yeah,
it's also similar with, I mean, the big event arena and stadium business. You see that people are spending lots of money on the few big shows. I went to Coldplay this summer. Everybody, $500 a ticket. It was sold out in Boston. I was there the night before the incident, but I was there nonetheless.
Damn it. Just missed.
Just missed it. But there's only so much time and resource, and especially in these sort of crooked economic times where things are just a little bit people are afraid of what the future holds. They don't know, what they're going to do. And you see the industry is continuing to have to adapt. And so we're listening to all of the sort of things that are out there, and then doing the best things that we can to control our circumstances, which is, we know we have a lot of fans who love the community of music that is surrounded with us in Moon River, that enjoy the kind of people that, like, we always, great example of this, security at Moon River is always like, wow, this is the easiest event of the year.
It's a pretty chill place.
Yeah,
pretty chill.
I can see that.
So that's not random. That's because of the kind of music and the spirit of the music that we tend to attract and book. And so I don't want to let those things just sit on the sidelines. We want to stay in it. And this is a way we can do that. And it's a way that matches with our own history as a band and our own story. And I think it, while it's a curveball, I think the people that take a swing at it will be very pleasantly surprised that they will experience that same spirit in a new and different way. And who knows, maybe down the road, it's a both and, I mean, I couldn't express enough how much I love the city and the people of Chattanooga. It's been a part of my story that I never saw coming. Of the four cities in Chattanooga, of four cities in Tennessee, Chattanooga is the one that I knew the least amount of people and had the least amount of history, but I still had a pretty good history there. And this chapter, I hope, is just one of many chapters in our story with Chattanooga. But we as people and as a band want to invite people into community. Music is about that. And just because things are different for now, doesn't change that sort of rock bed truth that we care deeply about our fans and want them to have experiences with their friends and their family around music that help them tell their own story and live into sort of the life they want to have. And it's an interesting time to try to do that with other external factors that we cannot control. So
Jeff, I want to ask you,
long answer.
I want to ask you, because I can't think of anybody else again, like I said at the beginning, who can answer this. What's it like being in that room when a storm comes and you have to cancel something? I was in Louisville at Forecastle, I think. Was it Sam Smith that was on stage when that, I don't know what happened, a gustnado, tornado?
It was still one of the most freak storms I've ever.
It was unbelievable. You went flying by us. I was with my daughter and Brad Steiner, co-founder of the podcast, and he's drunk out of his mind, and he's like, oh, it just got colder. This is great. And then you go running by, and the top of the stage goes flying off, and you're like, get out of here, get out of here. And I think I was with Grace again at Bonnaroo. She was doing volunteers, so she had her walkie-talkie and headset, and I think you came over and said, everybody shelter in place.
It's a Macklemore year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so the cliched, we always want to be the fly on the wall, right, of these meetings, of these discussions.
And I'm asking again, it's sort of to Brian's point about the Reddit. Everybody thinks they know what happened, and everybody's immediate reaction is they just did it because they're cheap and they're saving a buck and they don't care about fans.
Live Nation doesn't care about anybody.
I'm happy to speak to it because the internet and what they decide to talk about is ridiculous at times. The number one thing that we are concerned about in that room is fan safety. I mean, it's the safety, not just fan, the safety of everybody who is there. That is our number one concern. And no one in that room takes it lightly that whatever decision that we make, if it goes wrong and we're wrong, you're playing with people's lives. And that is, and that's so like that, to have that weighing on you is really an immense weight. And so you kind of ask yourself when thinking about stuff and presented all the information, there's certain SOPs and protocols, you see a certain thing, it doesn't matter. Like the decision's made for you, but you look at it and you're like, if I do this wrong and now I delay or I waste time and delay making a decision, that could cost someone's life. And am I willing to take that and own that? And that is, I would say, the main thing. It has no one. I mean, we just talked about the economics. Having a festival go dark for an hour, unload them and then reload them in, the amount of money you're losing off of that. So, I mean, if you're really talking financials, that's going to be the worst part of the decision is doing that. It always comes back to safety. And what, based on all the information that we have and I would say from everywhere. So, I mean, we've got weather services that you pay for. You've got people like, I love, you know, talking to farmers. I think farmers know more about the weather than anybody. And bringing in those experts in the space to provide the right information, say, okay, what can we do safely? And then, you know, I can speak to the Bonnaroo set is the saturation of water. Where's that water going? What's that going to mean? Because fans aren't thinking about the fact of like, what if a car needs to get in and out? And if a car can't get in and out because it's stuck, and if you've got 50,000 automobiles that are now stuck, what does that mean in terms of resources and safety and emergency services? So, I mean, regardless of the space, and we speak to Moon River, if you have an evacuation at Coolidge Park, the majority of your people are having to cross that bridge. How long is it going to take someone who's in a wheelchair to make it across that bridge if we've got lightning and heavy storms coming along the way. So those are all the factors that kind of go into, and no one takes it lightly. Everyone is very well aware of the responsibility that's placed in their hands when it comes to the safety of everybody on that site. And that's how it goes. And you know what? I've never made a bad, and when I say a bad call, I mean a call that I regret. I always say that every call that I've ever made, I'd make it again 10 out of 10 times. Now I've made some calls where it didn't, you know, storm takes a shift, whatever may happen. And, you know, the thing didn't happen, but I will still stand by, doesn't matter. Based on what we had, if it had continued on its current trajectory or done whatever it's done, like we could have wreaked havoc. That one you mentioned it at Forecastle, that was one of the scariest ones I think I've ever been a part of, because it was one of the most beautiful nights I think I had ever been a part of on any site. And when we got the call from our weather monitoring service, they were like, you have minutes to get people out of there, because this thing came out of absolutely nowhere. I believe it just how it formed, it wasn't seen. And I mean, we all saw the damage of what happened. I mean, the fact that we were able to open the next day was a testament to that whole team that, you know, worked tirelessly to rebuild and get ready for it. But yeah, it's an extremely difficult thing to do, and nobody wants to make that call. But it always comes down to safety. So I hated seeing people walk up to me like, my weather app says this. I'm like,
yeah,
great. Like, I'm happy that, yeah, you know, your yeah, $2 app or your free app says
no, they're
that
free.
The storm's gonna
he didn't
do
pay
this
for that.
Yeah. Like, you're worried about yourself and your investment into the show. And so am I, but I'm more concerned about your life and the life of everybody who's entrusted us to be here today.
Drew, you had to do a very similar, and to kind of to Jeff's point, that day, that Sunday in Moon River, the weather was clear, not clear.
It was beautiful.
Clear,
oh my God, it was beautiful on that Sunday, yeah. But all that rain was already
but
there.
But the site was wet, and the Saturday, I guess, when we cleared, I mean, not only are, I guess, you're in that room making the decision, Drew, but then you pick up a guitar and go out and entertain the crowd for a while. So I can only imagine how stressful that whole thing was.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I actually was not in the room making the decision because I was out on the curb singing.
Better decision.
Yeah. That was a hard day for me. I mean, it was a tough decision, you know, especially tough when I wasn't in the room and yet my name was on the decision because it's my festival.
Yeah.
And so I'm taking the heat, and that's why I demanded basically the pivot to Soldiers and Sailors. I said, find me a space in this city right now. I'm throwing a free show. Because it was that was a tricky one, because the weather was gone, but the site was wrecked. And it didn't happen the day before the festival, or like it was happened. People were like waiting out and they're like, the sun is shining.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an overnight storm, for those that don't know. And then we woke up and all waited like any hour now, we get to go in. And then like 12 hours later, we still can't go in. Yeah.
No. Actually, it was both. It was an overnight. Okay. And then there was an afternoon 2 inches.
Oh,
in an
is
hour.
That right? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting.
Yeah. You could see it coming. Yeah. That's right. That's.
I'll never forget, because I was, I went and got a tattoo, thinking like this will as it crossed the street with the moon. Where were it? I don't know where it is. Right here.
Nice.
My Moon River tattoo.
Flash tattoo.
That was really quick, and then I went back over and I was like, okay, we're gonna go. Like, no, we got some decisions to make. And I was like, well, there's, you know, 1,000 people standing at the gate. I'm gonna go out there and sing for them. And then I came back in, and decisions had been made. So that pivot, that, you know, thankfully the team was willing to sort of meet me in my frustration and help me pivot to put something on that night. And then basically I was personally calling any of the artists, don't leave town yet, can you please stick around, and we're gonna play this event. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, anybody who's been in those rooms has to understand that there is, like Jeff said, the priority is safety, and then after that, you know, the priority is making sure that the experience is, I mean, if you have Bonnaroo a couple of years ago, the site got completely wrecked, you know, obviously Jeff and I were not involved in that by that point. But when you can't have emergency vehicles get in and out of a site with 100,000 people, that's not a safe environment for anybody, much less getting production in, getting food in. I mean, these are logistical challenges. And while Coolidge Park is an incredible place, it presents some very unique logistical challenges. So there's you kind of wish that everybody who was a part of it would trust the spirit of everybody who's making these decisions, that this idea that it's all about money. I mean, our partners took a bath when we canceled that Sunday, a financial bath, because they made sure that everybody got a refund because we weren't able to pull it off. So that narrative is just like, I think you also get to a point where you go, okay, while I believe that whoever's saying that in frustration is coming from a place that they're angry, I can't listen to that noise because I know that's not true.
Right.
That's not actually true.
Right. So, well, you guys listening can go back again. We did a whole podcast with Drew and some of the city people and the auditorium people. And the fact that you gave the refund and the fact that you did that show, it went a long way to fixing some of those feelings. And we've said on here, Brad Parker and Corey Smith being so active on social media and coming on our show and talking about it, it kind of put a human face on Bonnaroo this past year that I think kind of eased some of that anger and that angst. But
the pricing on this festival, Moon River at Sea, a lot of different options. Are there all-inclusive nature to any of this? Just to speak to the pricing, if you would, for those who don't know.
Sure. It is. So one of the things I love what we do, there's no stratification. You're not talking about like VIP, super VIP, all that kind of stuff. It is purely about cabin type. So if you want more of a, you know, if you're like, I'm not going to be in my cabin because I'm going to be out either listening to music and having fun or playing the slots, then, you know, you have your interior options and then you go all the way up to, you know, suites where you've got a little bit more comfort. You have a balcony and you have that. So it varies based upon that. Also for this event, thirds and fourths for children are taxes and fees. So if you
have,
if you bring your kids for it, and they're your third and fourth passenger in your cabin, they're taxes and fees only. There is the opportunity to purchase a beverage package, but all of your food outside of specialty dining is included. All of the music, all of the everything, the programming we have going on, all included. If you want to consume adult beverages, there's a package for that, or you can go one by one, your choice. Spa stuff is extra and things like that. But if you truly look at the value of getting there and basically all of that being there, and I mean, it's an international vacation, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better value out there. And that is even comparing going to other multi-day events. I think there's always a little bit of a sticker shock because if you compare it to another other style end, it's like, that's only a couple $100, you know, times two or three people, whatever it may be. But then you start factoring, okay, I may have to fly or I may have to drive. I still have to get hotel. I still have to do all of those things. Once all of that stuff adds up, you know, Drew was even talking about it. It's like the sphere, you know, you could spend a lot of money. Whereas this is your vacation. You're getting a full festival experience, multiple stages, multiple artists, and the comfort of not having to use a port light.
So there are plenty of options and no port-a-john. So we're good
and no
there.
Port-a-johns.
We're good there.
Mm-hmm. I think I speak for both of us that we love the community that's been a part of this. And I love the talking about the sort of triumphs and tragedies of putting on festivals, which is a lot of what you guys talk about. And I mean, at the end of the day, we both love music and we love the people who love music, and I'm excited to sort of keep this thing alive by trying something new.
I want to just confirm, you did say there is maybe a chance it comes back to Chattanooga if we can find the right venue.
I mean, we're certainly not giving up on that. Yeah.
Nice.
Jeff, final thoughts. Yes.
Come sail with us. This is your community. Moon River fans, please, you know, come with us because it's the magic of all of us being together. And, you know, I can say this is one of those fun ones. Like I say, as a fan, I am so excited about this event. I can't tell you how, you know, even just being here with Drew, it truly is one of these moments of being able to do something that I love and being a part of. And I am excited to see all the fans back together and this community enjoying what we enjoy most with the beautiful thing that Drew has built.
Well, I can say I'm pretty sure you two are the most frequent guests that we've had on the show. You've both been always very willing and able to come on and answer questions on or off, and I can't thank you enough for that.
Always.
Thanks for having
us. Jeff, Drew, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
All right, guys, this is why we do this podcast. This is why I do this podcast. That was amazing. The inside baseball stuff is so much fun, and those guys have been sources, great resources for years and years. So what's your quick takeaway?
It's a phenomenon of sorts. It's not new, but it's really picked up in popularity in the last half decade. Mm-hmm. I meant to try to weave it in, but I couldn't figure out how. The destination vacation, you know, gatherings like Panic in La Playa and this year in Miramar, Florida, My Morning Jacket, those kinds of things. That's also become quite popular. Similar thing, except it's not a boat, right? But you're still doing the same kind of thing. It makes the on land Bonnaroo type experience seem like it could be in trouble long term, because I mean it's if all goes well, which most of the time it does on these cruises, it's pretty damn nice. It's a pretty good situation. I knew that. I've never done it before, but I did believe that. I don't know. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a huge swing. It's a huge ask and transition. It's not guaranteed to work, but I think it's worth the attempt.
Yeah, to me that was. It does sound like a lot of fun. Is a takeaway. It's very specific. You know, you gotta like the lineup for sure. These things gotta be lineup oriented. As a fan, but also it just speaks to the industry trying to find a place and a way to have some control over things they can't control, like the weather and costs and all those types of things. So I thought it was interesting for him to say it is another piece in a large puzzle of opportunities for the bands. I hadn't really thought of it that way.
Yeah, and we mentioned the ones that people are more familiar with, especially Bonnaroo, but like the Forecastle story and then the Moon River Day weather event. Well, we also had our other festival that we lost had a day wiped out, or half of it wiped out too. And so like it's that most people don't know about that because they wouldn't care, but how many do we not know about?
Yeah,
smaller ones where that also happens, and from county fairs to whatever else. And so like eventually you're going to have a promoter, you're going to have somebody, an executive, a suit say enough.
Yeah.
we're not doing this anymore. Speaking of slots and sitting in a casino, these are gambles that I'm not sure that the people with the pockets full of money are going to continue to do. So it's nice to know that there are lots of different options. I'll never rather be on a boat than be in a field.
Sure.
Myself. All things being, we'll say, equal and desirable, I will always rather be on a land, a plot of land, or a city, you know, on a city center, than I want to be on a boat. But I don't know.
Yeah,
put me on a boat. Maybe I'll change my mind. Sorry, Taco.
How do I get the bus onto a boat? Because I don't want to do it unless I can camp, you know.
Way to bring it back.
I'm thinking of the Titanic when they're driving the Model T's, the rich people, the Model T's onto the Titanic.
Yeah. Right. Barge. That's next. Music on a barge.
But I know it's a great idea or a very, very bold and I believe good idea. Lineup wise, it depends on who you ask. It's if you stack them up against all his past lineups, I'm just sorry to say it's not as good. It's not as good as some of these other ones were. But they're all, it's the same thing. It's the same genre. It's the same kind of people. It's the same kind of vibe. It's the same kind of ethos.
I thought the lineup looked great. I thought it just made me a little sad. I was like, man, this would have been so good at Coolidge Park in Chattanooga. This is exactly what you know, we should have had here.
Just one man speaking, but sure. The challenges that they just spoke of for nearly, you know, an hour it goes way beyond even that. So good on them for doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Any other news that we know of? Any other thing we want to mention?
I think we're
just
good.
Coming up.
Week.
Yeah. Next week, you know, we're going to be at the Caverns. Going to try to do some stuff there. We've already reached out and hopefully gotten some stuff set up. So Cave Fest is all bluegrass. Speaking of lineups, not necessarily my thing. I know it's not
beaten over the head with this stuff, man.
We've got bluegrass to death. Three Sisters bluegrass in Chattanooga this weekend. So
going on,
it's
right
been a month of bluegrass.
I can't wait. I do want to say, in case anybody from Memfo is listening, because I know everybody within every boardroom is listening to this show. I was planning on going to Memfo. Speaking of Drew bringing that up earlier this weekend, Widespread Panic's playing two nights, and they took care of me for it. But it's too close to K-Fest, and I'm kind of broke. And Memphis, you guys who are not from Tennessee, Memphis, just drive over there.
Yeah.
It ain't that
easy. No, that's across the state, yeah.
It ain't that easy. And Memphis might as well be, you know, on another planet sometimes.
It is on another planet.
So anyway, that's but K-Fest is next. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I always love talking to Jeff Andrew. Jeff has been so great. He's one of the original Inside Baseball sources for us and always has been. And he actually helped facilitate getting Drew back on here. So thanks to those guys. Thanks to you guys. Thanks to everybody listening. And we will talk again soon.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.